Welcome into the Monday Scramble podcast. Jay Coffin here alongside Ryan Lavner. You know, Lav, there was a lot of golf in 2016, so that means there was a lot of golf to be covered.
Yes.
You and I both covered a lot, correct?
Our wives would probably say too much, but yes.
Actually, mine probably wish I covered more. Maybe not my kids. I don't want to speak for my kids, but my wife, I feel pretty comfortable in saying she wishes I was gone twice as much as I was. But let's bring in right now Golf Central producer Andrew Bradley's on the phone. He's been with us for 10 years. He's covered more golf this year than both of us combined.
Yes.
Andrew Bradley, 27 events this year. Is that correct, Brads?
Yeah, it is, guys. It's been a long but a very great year covering the PGA Tour for Golf Channel.
Well, so talk us, before we get into sort of highlights and lowlights of the year, just kind of give us a 30 seconds, 45 seconds on what you do, Brads. Brads, what do you do?
No one knows what you do for a living. Jay and I write and we edit, and that's what we do. No one knows what the heck you do, so tell us.
So pretty much what I do is that I cover the, I work for Golf Central out in the field, bringing in all the video, the highlights, sound, working with our reporters on their reports for the daily, Golf Central's Tuesday through Sunday. When there's early highlights that you'll see on the broadcast and on Golf Central pre and post game, we go out, we get those highlights in the morning with our two cameras. You see the interviews that are shot prior to the broadcast on Thursday through Sunday and on Tuesday and Wednesday. We're out getting those with our illustrious reporters, Todd Lewis, Pete Bukowski, George Savarikas, to name a few. So anything that's done out in the field, we cover it and we feed it back to Orlando to be put on the air for all the viewers to watch.
Bradley, who's the biggest diva out there? I'm just kidding. This will be like the uncut Monday Scramble. We can get to that one on a different podcast. You've covered a lot of events and a lot of really cool moments happened this year. Probably not so cool for Jordan Spieth, but the Masters was certainly memorable. You had the opportunity to cover the Olympics. The Open was some of the best golf we've ever seen head-to-head. What are some of your best memories from this year covering the tour?
Well, I think one of the best. I mean, that's the Open Championship, not just because it obviously came to NBC this year. But, I mean, the first round that Phil Mickelson put together was to be out there and to watch and to see it and to be in the mix and the crowd, as you guys know. I mean, it was just tremendous golf to watch. And then obviously what the last 3 days transpired with him and Henrik, and the final day was, I mean, one of the best rounds of golf I've seen in a long, long time. And just it added up to a great win for someone we all truly think is a great guy and a great character in the game, and Henrik Stenson. I think that's one of the best moments of the year for me. But I mean, you talked about the Olympics, and I got to go cover both weeks, men and women, the Olympics, and not just what we saw on the golf course, but the experience outside of it as well, was one of the best memories that I have this year, and something that we all kind of wondered what it would be like. We always, players who said they weren't going to show up and not going to play, and I think that the Olympics got what they needed in the Olympics and the six medalists that they had.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Brad. You and I we were down there quite a bit together, and I've said this before, and I didn't say it too much publicly before, but it took me a long time to warm up to golf in the Olympics. It just did. It wasn't necessarily it was the popular opinion 5-6 years ago. I just kind of was always, look, golf has its four, and this is never going to come. It was the obvious argument, right? It's what everybody had. I understood it, and I grew up as a swimmer, so to me the Olympics is the top. From the time I was 5 years old, I was all in on swimming, so every 4 years, I loved the Olympics and I loved golf. I just didn't necessarily love them both together. And getting ready to go down there, talking to my wife, she was just like, look, go down there and whatever happens, happens. You're covering the Olympics, and that's pretty cool. And to get that kind of a payoff, just, Bubba Watson, who would have thought that Bubba Watson basically helped save the Olympics for the Americans, and how great he was, and Ricky Fowler, and then Rose and Stinson again, and it was just, and then Kuchar sneaking in there for a bronze. It was tremendous. I mean, I'm not an overly emotional person or excitable person, but being down there was ridiculously cool.
It just so happened, too, that the men's and women's championships were good theater.
Yes.
In terms of good golf.
Certainly helps.
If you had, if you had some no-name winners on both sides and there's really no drama and they won by three or four shots, you're probably not going to have this reaction. But now everyone who did skip out saw this, and now they can't wait for 2020.
Yeah.
Jordan Spieth can't wait for 2020. Dustin Johnson can't wait for 2020. Yeah. I mean, all these players who took a pass, they can't wait for a 4 years' time.
Yeah. And I think maybe they just need to see what it was going to be like, you know. And
you can
use whatever reason that they use to not go play. And you know, Adam Scott was obviously the one who was, out front and saying he just doesn't believe that golf should be in the Olympics. And that's fine. We always appreciated his candor and his honest opinion. When I was out there on the final green, watching Justin Rose make that putt and had that big reaction, like he'd won a major championship, like when he won, you know, the U.S. Open back at Marion in 2013, that solidified what the Olympics like. It gave me goosebumps. And watching the medal ceremony and then being around these guys afterwards and seeing the pride that they had in wearing that medal, that's where it really started to kind of feel like, wow, this is golf has made golf made its mark in the Olympics.
And even still, those medals are still a big deal right now. And Justin Rose talking about how much it meant to his son, that was all really cool. And all right. Golf Channel producer Andrew Bradley joining me and Ryan Lavner here on the Monday Scramble podcast. All right, Brads, so let's set aside the big ones. I mean, everybody knows the Masters is cool and the Olympics was cool and, you know, the DJ stuff at the U.S. Open, just, you know, the Open, the PGA, the Ryder Cup, those are all cool. Set those aside, and I don't want to call it a regular tour event because I don't want to belittle it or anything, but set the big boys aside. Any other cool moments this year that sort of stand out in your mind?
A couple out on the West Coast swing, actually. I was in Hawaii for when Jordan Spieth, you know, won and rounded the field in Maui. But a couple, one at the Farmers Insurance Open. Ryan, you were out there covering it as well with me. The fact of what happened on Sunday with weather and the 50 to 60 mile an hour winds that just howled in, we had actually evacuated the media center. The lights were about to look like they're about to fall down there.
And the round that Brant Snedeker shot.
That's what I was just saying. The round that Brant Snedeker shot that day, people seem to think, yeah, I mean, listen, the Henrik Stenson, the Phil Mickelson rounds in the majors, off the charts good. But this may have been the best round of the year that nobody talks about anymore. And then to be there on Monday with no fans allowed, no one was allowed on the course except for the players and the media, and it was just an eerie feeling. It was a beautiful day. And then you're sitting there with Brant Snedeker on the putting green when KJ Choi didn't make that putt on 18, and the exuberation after that it was a tremendous moment. And then to actually go 2 weeks later and see Vaughn Taylor win on the PGA Tour for the first time, I think it was 2004, I want to say.
Yeah, 11 years, 12 years, something like that.
Yeah, the emotion that was on his face and his family's face. I was in the scoring area with him. That really shows. Like you forget about. We see all these big names win, and we want to see them win, you know, the top five players in the world, the names you want to see win. But seeing someone like Vaughn Taylor and the emotion that was on his face, you know, hugging his family and his son that's there, that's what I think sometimes we seem to forget, is that, you know, there's a guy who's struggled for years. He's a Ryder Cup player and struggled so much recently with his game, and all of a sudden he comes out and he has this magical week at Pebble Beach. Needing obviously Phil Mickelson to miss that short putt on 18. That was a truly, I think, a cool moment, as you said, in what we call a regular tour event that really stuck out in my mind this year.
Yeah, that Brant Snedeker round at Torrey Pines was ridiculous. I remember distinctly going into the parking lot at Torrey Pines and sitting in ESPN.com writer Bob Herrick's car as we waited out to see whether we were all about to die. I also think of Ken Duke's round. You talk about where does Sned's round rank this year. Ken Duke's 65, I believe it was, in the third round at TPC Sawgrass, when that course was basically unplayable.
Mm-hmm.
Was really, really good. Brad's one of the tournaments that I covered this year that was kind of under the radar, and I'm not just saying this as a shill for Golf Channel, but that NCAA championship on both the men's and women's side was just awesome. If you think about the women, you had all these crazy upsets. You had hole outs to determine matches. It was some of the best theater we've seen all year. And then you had Bo Hostler, who is the best player in college golf on the men's side. He's going to be a huge star once he recovers from shoulder surgery. Hurts his shoulder in the semifinals. He can't play in the finals. And it still came down to the end of the wire. I was doing a different job, doing a reporting job. I would have had Andrew Bradley probably holding my hand if he was actually covering that tournament. But that was really cool to me. That was some of the most exciting golf.
Yeah.
Men's, women's, amateur, pro, whatever you call it. It was some of the best golf we saw all year.
2017 is going to have a lot to live up to.
Yeah, there's no chance that it lives up to that.
Go ahead, Brad.
And if you want to know how much that had an impact, I was covering the Memorial that week, and we're at a restaurant eating dinner. It was like me and Todd Lewis and a few other people, and it's on, and we're glued to the TV, watching that excitement. And as Ryan knows, I'm a huge college golf and amateur golf fan. So we're sitting there glued to the TV watching all of that stuff go on. So, yeah, I definitely – you're right. It's not just sound self-serving to the company that was on Golf Channel, but the – and players are watching it too. Their alma mater's a part of it. They're watching and they're wanting to see this. And I think I agree with you, Ryan. It was some fantastic theater.
All right, Brad. So, look, you know, maybe it is college golf. Maybe it's not. But, you know, you're on the road for 27 weeks. So over half the year, you're away from your family. And I hate to add more to your plate. I would never want to do that. But were there one or two events that you did not cover that you actually sat back and looked at and thought, man, I actually kind of wish that I would have been there?
I mean, obviously, and I've seen a – I've seen a 59 to win, Stuart Appleby, yep. Greenbrier back in 2010. I was there.
That's cool.
Obviously would have loved to have seen Jim Furyk's 58 in person.
Yeah.
You definitely look at that and say, man, I wish I could have been a part of that. I'm trying to think back on some of the events that
you've only had like 4 weeks off, so there really isn't that many to choose from.
I'm impressed that you came up with one.
that was definitely the one that sticks out, because I actually remember turning on the TV. I was, you know, at home and kind of watching that and going, man, unbelievable that he's putting this together, and it could have been lower.
Yeah.
Brad's one of the things that – sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good.
I was going to say, just kind of shifting gears a little bit, one of the main perks of our job is that we do have a media credential and that we get to go places that the fans can't go. I'm curious, were there any, you know, behind-the-scenes stories that kind of made you think a little bit this year? I can think of a couple examples. Just the humanity of Jordan Spieth after the Masters. I mean, he just had his heart ripped out in front of everybody. He sat through that green jacket presentation. Was absolutely shell-shocked,
yep.
Putting that on Danny Willett. And then for him to stand up, answer the questions while his parents, his manager, his girlfriend, his swing coach were all in the parking lot, mm-hmm. crying, unable to form sentences, did not want to talk at all. For him to stand up Amazing. And do that was absolutely incredible. Do you have any stories like that, you know, kind of peeling behind the curtain of things that the average listener, reader, viewer at home wouldn't know?
So I think another great one, an example of who I think he is a person and as a player, Jason Day after his Players' Championship win. Obviously, you guys both know there is a lot of media and other things that a champion has to do, especially at a big event like that. And we're, you know, after he gets done with the trophy ceremony and he gets done with, and my producer, Matt Hegarty, is telling us, and we have something what we like to call the live view, and it's a portable, like almost like uplink truck, where we can plug into our camera and we shoot it, and it goes down back to and fed back to Orlando with a 12-second delay, so they can use it almost like a live camera. He said, we want you to follow Jason Day. We want you to just kind of document where he goes. And after he got done with his press conference, Jason Day, there was probably 100 fans, and a lot of them kids, kind of back by where the scoring area is, and we kind of followed him back down there. And he signed autographs for probably a good 20 minutes, took pictures with kids. It just showing that these guys aren't just running off and just trying to get out of there. He appreciates what these fans, especially the kids, and it's, you know, one of those days. And so he went and he signed autographs. Then he actually hopped in a car and we followed him. He went back to do a toast with all the volunteers in the volunteer area, back in like the maintenance area. And that's just kind of cool. Like I'm sure that these are things that they're supposed to do, but to do it, and he always does it with such a smile on his face and you know, heartfelt words of thank you to the volunteers and to sit there and sign autographs. That's just an example that I remember seeing and being able to document for our viewers that I thought was really cool.
Yeah, a lot of things like that stick out in my mind. Also, too, a little bit different, more of a sad note, but, you know, with Arnie's passing there right before the Ryder Cup, how many people we had on our air that were just bending over backwards to reach out to us to go on our air to just be able to give 2 minutes to talk about Arnie. I mean, you know, we could have filled 5 weeks and not repeated a single guest because people were just handing them phone, hey, go on Golf Channel and talk about Arnie. Got it. Absolutely. Why would you not do it? So that
it was like a telephone.
It was terrific right before. It was so good.
I was at the Tour Championship that week, and obviously we get the news, and my producer was trying to kind of not hide from me, but he's trying to make sure that it was going on before. And I'm like, hey, I need to know because Rory's in his press conference, and you know, if we want to get word from you, talk to Rory about it. And I think that also shows that when you talk about people just wanting to talk about Mr. Palmer. I mean, Rory, we stopped him afterwards. He'd done another like 5 interviews or whatever, and I was just like, I'm, and he's just sitting there and talks to us for 4 minutes about Mr. Palmer and about what he meant to him and some of the stories. And I think that's kind of one of those things they talk about. And I just, it's impressive. And it's stuff that you said we get to see and that maybe other people don't get to see.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, kind of interviews and stuff, we are reporters. We are in the field. We are talking to players, talking to managers, talking to whoever may be at a tournament. Let's just go around the horn here. Any memories of interviews, the best interviews you had this year? Jay, you covered the Olympics. No one was covering that really for us. What do you have?
I wrote it down, and it is weird, but Aditi Ashok, who just won. Last week when this came out, I was thinking about this last week. No, you know, in preparation for this, my hours and hours of preparation for this podcast, that stood out to me before she even won this week about how poised she was, how refreshing she was.
18?
How sweet, yes. I mean, just a sweetheart of a girl. I mean, really, of a young lady. I mean, 18 years old. Just an absolute sweetheart. Sort of got it. Just was interested in playing. Used to eat dinner across the street from a golf course and with her family and said, hey, that would be cool. There was no background of family history of playing, and her dad got her going. And for her dad to sit there who carried her bag that week and her dad talked to us for another half hour. He had almost tears in his eyes. Yeah, I'm just carrying the bag. But you could just see the pride that he couldn't. It didn't matter what she shot. The fact that she was there and was an Olympian, I mean, it almost made me cry just thinking of my 11-year-old daughter who can't make contact with a golf ball. Like, just thinking of what kind of pride he must have after just talking to her, them, and then to see what she's done this past weekend was really refreshing. Would love to see her get out on the LPGA.
Yeah, I wrote down 3 interviews. They were so memorable I had to write them down so I wouldn't forget them. The first one, and Brad's, we talked about Torrey Pines and not trying to blow away that week. But earlier in that week, I talked to Gary Finau, Tony's father, and I talked to him for 2 or 3 hours, just kind of detailing his son's improbable rise through poverty and really not having a means to play. That interview is always going to stick with me. It didn't hurt that it was also like 68 degrees, perfectly sunny, and we were looking out on the Pacific, so that was certainly memorable. Maverick McNeely at the U.S. Amateurs had the opportunity to sit down with him. If you have never heard this kid speak before, it will just blow you away. He has got to be the smartest 20-year-old in the country. I know we're in the midst of this, you know, fallout from the presidential election. If Maverick McNeely runs for president, I will vote for him. He is just incredibly thoughtful, and I really enjoy spending time with him. And Mike Davis, interviewing him on the 18th green at Oakmont after the U.S. Open, his phone was blown off the hook. All the people in the blue blazers were kind of like tugging at his jacket, like, let's get the heck out of here. And you could just see that his life was about to change for the worse. The rules were never going to be the same after that. It was just a pretty incredible moment. That was a very short interview, but it was an interview nonetheless. Brad's, what do you got?
The Mike Davis one definitely sticks out. I remember talking on the phone. I mean, we have a certain number of passes to get out on the 72nd green there for the U.S. Open. And Courtney Holt, who's back kind of working some things for us, she's our senior director of player relations. She's trying to send a representative from the USGA out to the green so Steve Burkowski could interview him. And the whole Mike Davis, just crazy afterwards. One that really stuck out to me, and I was just thinking about this again as I was going back through my head all the tournaments I got to cover this year. James Hahn, his second win at the Wells Fargo Championship at Quail Hollow, and fighting back some tears because he knew. Cause, I mean, as he told us, he goes, "You win the first one, that's
that's great. You know, that's a breakthrough. But he's like, when is the second one going to happen? And he'd had a lot of struggles up to that point, missed a bunch of cuts in a row, and all of a sudden he's winning in a playoff on one of the more prominent courses on the PGA Tour, obviously going to host a major this coming year at the 2017 PGA. And just the emotion that he had sitting there talking to Todd Lewis afterwards and knowing that this wasn't that second win, it doesn't always happen, and that it did happen, that he knows that they're fleeting, that he needs to enjoy them, especially where, obviously where he's come from, coming up, being a shoe salesman at Nordstrom's and everything. So that was one that really definitely stuck out. Also, Henrik Stenson, and we sit down, we do interviews after every major, sit-down interviews with one of our reporters and the major champion, and these things take forever because there's also other entities that do the interviews as well. And these are after their media obligations with all the media in the media center. And Henrik Stenson sat down, not only did all the interviews for us and did them with great grace and a smile, and as we all know, Henrik's a great jokester, but he sat down and did about a 15-minute interview in Swedish afterwards with this guy who he's obviously known for a long time. And this was, again, just showing, I don't have an idea what was said. I don't know any Swedish, but it was really just kind of a cool moment. You're just sitting there listening, just like, wow, if I only knew what was actually being said, this would be great.
I was really wishing he was going to say that Todd Lewis was conducting the interview in Swedish. Yeah. That would have just made it so much better.
You should have thrown the old Google Translator on it and then translated it and sent it back. There's a couple good notes there you missed, Brad. Good job.
I know. It was just one of those things. I think the world of Henrik, he's always been so good to us. Yeah. He's always quick with just he always has that big smile on his face. He's a jokester, and he just was the best. And also just sitting down and Jimmy Walker afterwards, and he sat down with Steve Burkowski, Jimmy, ever think he's going to win a major? That was something that he talked about, and that he didn't know if it was ever going to come, and that he had won the five times in the PGA Tour. Just another class act that we got to sit down and talk to.
All right, Brads, we'll have you one more on your way out. Look, 2017 is going to have a lot to live up to. I know you're at McGladrey right now, and this year is not over. But is there anything right now, I know you need some rest. You need some rest as much as anybody here. Is there one thing next year that's already sort of you've got start, and it's something that you can't wait to get here for next year?
I was trying to think about this a little bit because it's tough. You said the year's not over with, and I'll do a lot of similar events next year. But I hate to just go with a big event. You're always waiting for the Masters because Rory's just right on the brink of of breaking through and winning the career Grand Slam, and you want to get there because it's Augusta. I mean, we all look forward to it. It's a rite of spring, and you get onto those hallowed grounds. So that's probably where I'm looking. I know it's a cop out to say, because the Masters, everybody's going to say that. You kind of look at that, and that's where you're kind of looking at getting there and covering it. I'm always looking forward to getting to Hawaii to start the year. The winners only event, the Tournament of Champions as well.
Boy, just a tough life, Brad.
Think of all the off the record stuff that's floating around in the three of our brains right now that we'd love to talk about, but there's just no way in hell that's going to happen, right?
It's been a tremendous year, and there's been some great moments. I mean, I know Jay, you go back to the Olympics real quick. I mean, going to all those events and the scene. One of the things that gracing I saw was handball at the Olympics. I thought that was tremendous.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's not picked up in the States. I think that'd be a lot of fun. We should get a Golf Channel handball team together.
Hey, you're bigger than us.
Yeah, I'm gonna start stretching my arm now.
If that happens, I'm picking you first. All right, buddy. As Andrew Bradley, we appreciate the time, buddy. Really appreciate you jumping in with all the insights from the year. So thanks a lot for joining us, man.
Please go spend time with your family and just sleep a little.
Yeah, reacquaint yourself with your loved ones, would you?
I definitely will. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, man. That's Andrew Bradley. And for Ryan Labner, I'm Jay Coffin. Thanks for joining us on this Monday Scramble podcast. We will catch you later.